Philco Corporation, world's largest radio manufacturer, presents your Radio Hall of Fame. From the beautiful Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood, today and every Sunday, for one full hour, the stars made great by your recognition of their achievements are brought to you by Philco Corporation. Makers today of radar and electronic equipment to help win the war. Makers tomorrow of products for good living in a world at peace. The list of successful candidates who today enter your Radio Hall of Fame is one of particular distinction, including as it does Hedy Lamarr, John Loder, Andy Russell, Marjorie Main, Beulah of the Fibber, McGee, and Molly program, Eileen Barton, Matty Malnick, harpist Robert Maxwell, and, of course, that permanent fixture of the Hall of Fame, Paul Whiteman. Our master of ceremonies today is an ex-band leader who became that very rare bird, a top-ranking comedian developed solely through the medium of radio. His programs has consistently rated among the most popular of the airwaves. He was the star of Republic Pictures' Here Comes Elmer and Hitchhike to Happiness. We've given plenty of reasons for his being in your Radio Hall of Fame. So let's roll out the carpet for the star of his own show, the gang leader himself, Al Pierce.
Thank you, friends, and to you too, Jimmy Wallington, thank you. And a very hearty welcome to the hundreds of servicemen and servicewomen who are our guests and other guests, those patriotic war workers who make the famous Northrop Black Widow fighter plane. And to all of you who are tuned in to the Radio Hall of Fame, I sure hope you're all listening. I hope.
You know, that's... Al, that reminds me, you're going to do one of your Elmer Blurt sketches tonight, aren't you?
Well, we would like to very much. But let's get into the show. We've got a great surprise for you here, because today we initiate into your Radio Hall of Fame two of the fastest up-and-coming young singers in the country. The first of these is the gal who leaves for New York Tuesday to appear on the Milton Berle program, Eileen Barton. Eileen happens to be the envy of every Bobby Sox gal in the country, having been the feminine singing star of the Frank Sinatra program. Sinatra. Whoa, boy, that. Hope he ain't listening. That's about as narrow as his chest. Eileen celebrates her initiation ceremonies by singing a popular new tune called Saturday Night. Eileen Barton, bring her on, men.
Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week. 'Cause that's the night that my sweetie and I used to dance cheek to cheek. I don't mind Sunday night at all, 'cause that's the night friends come to call. And Monday to Friday go fast, and another week is past. But Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually see. Until I hear you at the door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night of the week. I don't mind Sunday night at all, 'cause that's the night friends come to call. And Monday to Friday go fast, and another week is past. But Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week. I sing the song that I sang for the memories I usually see. Until I hear you at the door, until you're in my arms once more. Saturday night is the loneliest night in the week.
Thank you, Eileen Barton. Some of you fellows over here had the advantage on that one. And now here's Jimmy Wallington ready to hang his vocal cords on some interesting palaver about them there Philco radios.
Right you are, Al. If America has learned anything from the events of the last few weeks, it is that the war is not over until the last gun is fired. Whatever hopes and plans there may be for the future in a world at peace, the first thought in the Philco laboratories and production lines is the war to be won, and the radar and electronic equipment which our boys at the front are depending upon from Philco. Until that job is done, our peacetime plans can wait. Through its electronic research today, Philco is fulfilling the obligations of its radio leadership in producing the weapons of war. Tomorrow, through this war research, Philco will be even better prepared to fulfill the obligations of leadership in building the product of peace. You can depend upon it. The legacy of war research will be finer radios and phonographs from the industry leader, Philco, famous for quality the world over.
Philco has carved out a niche in your Radio Hall of Fame this afternoon for Marlon Hurt. Now, you probably are curious why Marlon Hurt, an unfamiliar name, should be getting his laurel wreath today. You've invited him to be with us because he is a permanent member of the Fibber, McGee, and Molly program.
We interrupt this program to bring you a bulletin from the Blue Network newsroom in Los Angeles. American forces have just entered Manila. The official announcement comes from General MacArthur's headquarters. This bulletin came from the Blue Network newsroom in Los Angeles. And now back to the Philco Hall of Fame.
I beg your pardon. Marlon Hurt.
Thanks, Al. I'm sure proud of the opportunity you're giving me.
Well, now, don't thank me for it. Thank our sponsor. Think nothing of it at all, Marlon. We're glad to have you.
Yeah, well, thank you, Mr. Al. I'm glad to be here myself. I really am.
Wait a minute. Who are you here?
Oh, I'm Bill. I'm Beulah's boyfriend.
Oh, Beulah? Wait a minute. Who's Beulah?
Somebody ball for Beulah?
Well, shut my mouth. Well, wait a minute. I better be getting out of here. That's catching. Before I go, though, I wish you'd tell how you do it, Marlon. Tell us all how you do it.
Well, it's very simple, Al. To begin with, I clear my throat like this.
Mm-hmm.
And then, first off, there's Bill. You see, I'm the latest choice.
Mm-hmm.
Then I slides up a bit to my natural voice. My larynx turns over, and this is the fool. I chip gears twice, and out comes Beulah.
Well, now I am leaving. This fella's haunted.
Oh, I get the craziest moods sometimes. Wish I knew what I was laughing at. I get so silly after an entire winter of the love bug gumming me to death.
Are you talking to yourself, Beulah, or can anybody join in this conversation?
Oh, Mr. Marlon, my romance has reached the dice rolling stage.
Dice rolling stage?
Yes, sir. Oh, it's a faded winter love. I'm telling you, November, December just wore me down to a big fat nub. Oh, I feel so silly, too.
Yes, sir, you look a little silly. I suppose you're now going to start looking for some new boyfriends to replace the winter crop?
Uh-uh. Now, sir, I'm going to be the Army's number one competitor. Starting tomorrow, I'm going out on Manuba.
Well, I didn't think the Army could cramp your style, Beulah.
Oh, Mr. Marlon, the Army is two steps ahead of me everywhere I look. They really is.
Is that so?
Yes, they really is. Sometimes I think the only thing for me to do is join the Army myself.
Oh, you can't do that, Beulah. Besides, I don't think you'd have much fun working with men only.
Oh, the answers that leap in my mind for that one. But speaking of me and my boyfriend Bill, he's due here any minute. He's a dress designer.
He is?
Yes, he's a fine designer, and he's funny, too.
Oh, I see, a comical designer, eh? He probably keeps you in stitches.
He keeps me in stitches. Oh, Mr. Marlon, you sure make me laugh at your jokes, don't you? Funny or not. Well, here comes Bill now.
Well, I think I'll leave you two alone, Beulah.
Now, don't go too far, Mr. Marlon. It's going to be awful quiet around here with you gone.
Well, I'll just walk around the theater. I'll see you a little later.
Well, so long, Mr. Marlon, and howdy-do, Bill.
Yeah, let me see here. Well, honey, shall we proceed immediately to the business on hand of planning a wardrobe for you, or shall we take a quick detour on the road to romance?
Oh, you crazy scutty, you. You ought to think about them other things. Thank heaven. But Bill, tell me something. I read in the paper the other day where they picked Miss America of 1945. How do my measurements compare with hers?
I can tell you in two words, unfavorably.
Well, is I lost my old finger, Bill?
No, you ain't lost your old finger, honey. You just gained a couple of new ones, that's all.
Well, I was possibly thinking of carrying out an old-fashioned scheme. Could I wear a bustle?
No, that'd be carrying it out too far. But let's quit this tailoring nonsense, honey, and let's slip from the arduous to the amorous. Give us a little hug. You'll enjoy it.
Listen to the man, will you? How do you know I won't enjoy it?
I've been taking a gal a pole, honey, not a complaint, and a car low.
Now, wait a minute, just a minute. What makes you think you're such a great lover?
Woman, I yields to the verdict of the majority.
He yields to the verdict of the majority. Look at me. Love that man.
Thank you, Milton Hurt. Standing beside me is the famous Paul Whiteman alumnus, Matty Melnick, one of the top hot fiddlers in the country, who used to massage the catgut in Paul's band and now has a gorgeous scads of commercials all his own. Matty is not only a Whiteman alumnus, but he has also acquired the Whiteman touch for picking talent. For instance, there's a harpist named Robert Maxwell. But, Matty, I think you're the man to discuss Bob Maxwell.
Well, Al, when my band was playing in the Rainbow Room in New York, a young harpist came up to audition for me. He was terrific. He played classical and swing, just out of the world. Well, I put him in my band. And Bobby Maxwell is the greatest harpist I've ever heard. In fact, his playing inspired me so much that I got together with him and wrote the Harp Fantasy just for him.
Thank you.
Forgot to announce that Robert Armstrong is Robert Maxwell is a member of the United States Coast Guard. And I knew you boys were right in there pitching on that one. I do apologize today. We have such a big crowd here and everybody is so jammed up, but it's kind of in keeping with the times, I guess, being all crowded. Everything is crowded nowadays. Everywhere you go, there's a jam up of something. These streetcars, for instance, have you tried to ride a bus lately or a streetcar? Paul Whiteman told me the other day, he says, these streetcars are so crowded nowadays, it's getting to a point where it's fun. Now, friends, your Radio Hall of Fame is proud to initiate into its inner circle Hedy Lamarr and John Loder of the Scream. Hedy Lamarr is far more than being one of the most beautiful women in motion picture history. Her unusual versatility has been proven in the wide variety of characters she has played, such as a French woman in the picture Algiers, a Russian girl in Comrade X, a Portuguese peasant in John Steinbeck's Tortilla Flat, a half-caste in Lady of the Tropics, and an American girl in H.M. Pullman, Esquire. She again plays the part of an American in her latest starring vehicle, the RKO film Experiment Perilous, which in the picture co-stars George Brent and Paul Lucas, and which will be dramatized on this program, we're happy to announce. In the dramatization, the part of Dr. Huntington Bailey will be portrayed by film star John Loder, who in real life is married to Miss Lamarr. Oh, boy. Oh, you keep quiet. You fellas in the front row, a fella can't. Now, John Loder has won fame for such first-rate dramatic performances as How Green Was My Valley, Eagle Squadron, Scotland Yard, and Old Acquaintance. His latest is RKO's The Brighton Strangler. And now Hedy Lamarr as Alida Bedereau and John Loder as Dr. Huntington Bailey in the radio premiere of RKO's Experiment Perilous.
It was the year 1903 that I, Huntington Bailey, doctor specializing in psychology, entered upon the strangest period of my life. Beautiful, but at the same time terrible. It all started when my friend Clag Claghorn, the artist, invited me to a tea at the Nicholas Bedereau's. I'd never met Bedereau, although I knew him by reputation, an important industrial figure who was responsible for the Bedereau scholarships for students, the Bedereau Prizes for Young Artists, the Bedereau Wing in the Knickerbocker Museum. Clegg had described Bedereau's wife, Alida, as a woman of superlative beauty with whom he, as well as many other men, had been in love. The day before the tea, I went to see her portrait in the Bedereau wing of the museum. She was beautiful. And there was a strange quality about the portrait that intrigued me. I was anxious to see her. Clegg introduced me to Bedereau, a saturnine-looking man of middle years, strongly built and of medium height. He had a slight Austrian accent. And then Bedereau presented me to his wife, who was pouring tea.
May I present Dr. Huntington Bailey, my dear?
Mrs. Bedereau?
How will you take your tea, Dr. Bailey?
Oh, I think he might have a touch of something stronger than tea, my dear. But you must go through the form of pouring tea, which you do so delightfully, and he will sit beside you for a few moments and reassure you about Alec's appetite. We have a 5-year-old son, Dr. Bailey, who refuses to eat as he should when I am not around to tell him stories.
I've seen your portrait, Mrs. Bedereau.
Alida is so fond of that portrait that she still wears the same gown. Be kind to him, my dear. Come on, Clegg. Talk to me.
It's not a pose, really. Nick designed the gown, and it pleases him to see me wear it. Maitland does paint beautifully, doesn't he?
Oh, I don't know anything at all about painting. As a matter of fact, Clegg insists I'm artistically illiterate. But I did say the picture was disturbing.
Why?
There was something in the expression of the eyes.
Yes?
I wanted to see for myself if it was the artist's imagination or if it was really there.
Which is it?
It's there.
Clegg tells me you're quite a famous doctor.
You're not curious about what I saw in the portrait or thought I saw?
Oh, yes. Yes, of course.
First of all, I must tell you, I came here for quite another reason. Not the portrait. I came because...
Oh, no. No. I didn't know that. I knew you were a doctor, but you didn't seem like that. Oh, please, please. Oh, how clumsy of me.
My dear child, what have you done now?
Oh, I'm sorry, Nick. It was stupid of me. I got up and forgot the tea tray was on my lap.
Well, don't fuss about it, my dear. Ring for Frank. Come on, Bailey. You must be needing something more stimulating than tea. Yeah, here you are, Doctor. Sherry, Madeira.
Sherry, please.
Yes, you may be precisely the fellow I want. Did she mention the boy at all? I mean, did she bring it up herself?
No.
You see, this is the first time an emergency has arisen involving peril to someone I love.
Peril?
Yes, peril. Alida and I are faced with a ridiculous crisis in our boy's life. He suffers from nighttime terrors, bad dreams, monstrous fears, simply because he's prevented from all normal expressions of a healthy small boy. Alida cannot understand that, and there's a very good reason. It's Alida, of course, not the boy. You're keen enough to have seen that.
I still think peril is too strong a word.
Do you remember the lines, life is short, art is long, decision difficult, experiment perilous? No, Bailey. The word is well chosen, and I need help. I can't go on without it.
The following morning, Bedereau came to see me at my office. He told me he was convinced his wife, Alida, was out of her mind. There was, for instance, her treatment of her son. The child had developed a fear complex. And then there was the matter of the daisies. According to Bedereau, Alida sent daisies to herself from florists and then had them delivered at strange times and denied that she was responsible for their delivery. She believed the doctors were questioning her about her sanity and that she was followed when she went shopping. Nick Bedereau asked me if I wouldn't come to the house and see her and place her under observation. I agreed. But Bedereau left me with a strange feeling that there was something out of tune about him, like a chord of music with some basic note left out. He seemed reasonable, logical, even brilliant. But he seemed to be at war. With what? With whom? I didn't know. Perhaps with life. That afternoon, purely by chance, I met Alida Bedereau shopping in a department store. She was seated at the counter. I went up to her. Well, this is a lucky chance.
Yes, isn't it? Were you told I might be found here?
Who could have told me that?
Nick. He knows I often shop here.
No, I can assure you Nick didn't tell me.
Dr. Bailey, you must think me a strange sort of person to have become so distressed yesterday and now to have questioned you.
No. And I'd rather you didn't think of me as a doctor. Whatever reason you have for disliking doctors is your own. And I'd like to be your friend. I am your friend.
Thank you.
I've been reading up on the Bedereaux. I remembered an article in the Manhattan and found it, luckily enough, written by someone named A. Gregory. Do you know him?
That was a long time ago.
Yes?
Oh, I don't know. I've forgotten.
Well, whoever he was, he gave a curiously superficial account of Nick, and all he had to say about you was that you raised country daisies as a hobby.
Is that so strange?
What?
That I once raised daisies. You see, the happiest memories I have is of playing in fields of daisies in Vermont. I was born there.
There's nothing strange about raising daisies.
Dr. Bailey, I thought you wanted to be my friend.
I do. You must believe me, I am your friend. And I know you desperately need help.
How do you know?
Oh, it was in your eyes and in your voice yesterday when you looked at me and said, please, please. That was also what your eyes said in the portrait.
Nick wanted me to ask you for dinner. Would tomorrow be convenient?
Yes, delighted. Mrs. Bedereaux, I am your friend. And if circumstances were different...
Shall we say 8 o'clock?
Yes, thank you.
Oh, Dr. Bailey, if Nick goes up to the boy, if he goes upstairs while we are at dinner, will you try to follow him?
Of course.
Thank you. Goodbye, Dr. Bailey.
The dinner at the Bedereaux house was strange. First, there were daisies in the center of the table. Alida, in a frightened voice, said she'd ordered American beauties from the florist. But Nick, with a look at me, denoting that such occurrences were frequent, replied that perhaps the florist had made a mistake, or maybe she had ordered daisies. Then, in the middle of dinner, their son's nurse came down to say the boy was crying, was screaming at her. And Nick, excusing himself, went upstairs to quiet the lad. On the pretext of making a telephone call to a patient, I left the room and followed him. Standing outside the boy's bedroom, I could hear Nick inside speaking.
All the witches go about their business when it gets dark. Bewitching business. Ugly witches like your nurse. And the more beautiful they are when the sun is up, the blacker and uglier they become when it gets dark. And what they want are little boys like you.
Not me, Father.
Oh, no, not you. And do you know why? Because Father knows all about witches. Father put up magic bars to keep you safe, but you mustn't tell. And the most dangerous witches of all are the beautiful witches.
Mommy's beautiful.
Shh.
I left shortly afterwards, presumably to see my patient. Nick, who was going to his club, offered me a ride in his carriage. During the ride, he told me how disturbed he had been about the flowers and the boy's behavior. He said that as far as Alida was concerned, he'd come to the end of his rope. I asked him as a physician if he could persuade Alida to come to my office the following day. He said he would. When he let me out, I phoned Alida and asked her to meet me in a booth in a restaurant just around the corner from her house. In 10 minutes, she was there.
Yes, Hunt.
Alida, do you trust me?
Yes.
You've got to get out of that house.
Oh, I'm frightened.
You mustn't be. Do you understand? You're not to be frightened ever again. There are two of us now.
He's doing something to Alec, and he keeps shutting me out as...
Please, don't. You've got to be calm, or you can't help me. Who was Alexander Gregory?
Oh, no, no.
Alida, tell me.
Nick said it was all my fault. He said if I pushed him in front of that carriage, I couldn't have killed him more surely.
How did Alec die?
Oh, it was the night of my birthday. Nick had given me a beautiful white jade necklace as a present. Alec Gregory arrived with an armful of daisies. He knew I loved them. After dinner, I found the necklace was no longer around my throat. I went into the living room to look for it. While I was there alone, Alec came in. He confessed he loved me. He kissed me. And then suddenly, the door opened and there was Nick. He had seen everything.
He had?
Yes. I managed to avoid a scene with Nick, but the atmosphere seemed charged with electricity. Alec stayed late. He was the last to leave the party. Then he insisted on walking. It was snowing heavily. Nick walked part of the way with him. And then...
Yes?
I don't know. They didn't find him until early morning. He'd been run down.
You didn't love Alec?
No, but I didn't know what was happening. Suddenly, everything seemed to have changed.
Yes?
And then later Nick came up, and his face was young and fresh. And for the first time, we found a moment of happiness.
I understand.
And all that time, Alec was out there in the snow.
It was Nick's idea to name your boy Alec, wasn't it?
Yes. He insisted. Oh, I'm afraid. I've got to get him out of that house.
We will. Trust me.
I didn't send those daisies to myself. I didn't. And Alec's dead. He couldn't send them to me.
My dear, my dear. Do you know why I pictured you with daisies? Because I love you. Because Alec loved you, he too thought of daisies.
Does Nick know how you feel toward me?
Yes, he knows.
Hunt, don't let me hurt you too.
Nothing you ever do can hurt me. Trust me, dear.
I do.
Now, don't be frightened. Just tonight, can't you do that? Only tonight, because of the boy.
Yes, dear. I'll go home now.
The following evening, Alida came to my office, as I had suggested to Nick. She had sent away all the servants, and she told me that Nick had gone to Boston, taken the Boston boat. I felt uneasy about this. But I told Alida we'd go to her house, get little Alec, and I'd take both of them to a place in the country. When we got to the Bedro home, we heard little Alec crying. Alida went upstairs to comfort him. And then, while I was waiting in the downstairs living room...
It's amazing how you fulfill every plan I have made for you. And you won't be rash, of course, Hunt, for this automatic makes hardly any more sound than the pop of a cork. And it would, of course, prevent you from rejoining Alida. Oh, she's quite unharmed, I promise you. It would be interesting to know your sensations at this moment. Do you mind?
The sensations of a normal man confronted by sudden death. Oh, you wouldn't understand, Nick. Not even if you gave me the revolver and let me point it at you. You couldn't feel as I'm feeling.
Good, good. I was afraid you wouldn't fight after all.
You're mad, Nick. Completely mad. Do you know that?
Who knows which one of us is mad? But mad or not, I am a killer, of course. I killed Alec.
But you won't kill me, Nick. I know your mind and I can reason
yes.
with you.
Tell me, did you come here originally to interfere with me?
No.
Then it was because of Alida. Alec tried to take Alida too. I knew you were after her when you made that lyrical speech about the daisies. How on earth did you know about the daisies?
I didn't. It came to me when I saw her.
Because you loved her?
Because I love her.
Move cautiously, Bailey.
I shall. How do you propose to get rid of yourself, Nick?
Quite simply. I made a reservation on the Boston boat tonight. I boarded it and left a suicide note in my stateroom. It will be found. Those clothes I am wearing are Frank's, my butler's, and in case I should be seen entering or leaving this house. Frank himself is far from here. There's a matter of an old criminal record. No one will connect me with what is going to happen to you and Alida.
I once said you were logical, even brilliant. You are, Nick, but you're also mad.
In 10 minutes, I shall leave you and walk out of this house. That is, to all appearances, Frank will walk out. You will be left to rescue Alida. They will discover we have had trouble with the furnace. I have seen to that. It is a... gas furnace, by the way. Can you smell it?
Yes.
The gas goes on and off again. There's a small stove next to the nursery upstairs, and possibly they may find the levers off. And when there is enough gas, and with the heat of that stove, there will be an explosion.
You're crazy. Your own son is upstairs.
Yes. Tell me one thing, baby. Is that boy mine, or is he Gregory's?
Yes, that's what you've been leading to, isn't it?
Answer me.
You're mad, Nick. Completely unreasonably
mad. Answer me!
He's your boy, of course. And a leader might have come to love you in time.
Blast you, Billy. Turn, or I'll shoot you!
After I'd overturned the table and knocked Nick down, I ran for the stairway leading upstairs to the boys' room where Alida was. Nick followed me. I struggled with him and sent him crashing with a blow to the chin. Then I ran up the stairway. The door to little Alex's room was locked. I broke it open. The room was filled with gas. A small lamp burned. Little Alec was huddled in his crib, his arm around a toy clown. Alida was stretched on a single bed as if she had flung herself there to rest while her son fell asleep. I smashed the window panes to let in air, and then there was the sound of footsteps. Nick had followed me. I flung myself at him and we wrestled down the stairway. Then suddenly Nick screamed.
Get back! Get back to her! You haven't time!
Nick Bedereau died in the explosion. Alida, little Alec, and I were badly burned, but we were rescued by the firemen. And when we were finally out of the hospital, I took them away to their little cottage in the country. We thought the whole business was finished. And then one day, Alida received a visitor, an investigator from the district attorney's office.
I was told the inquiry was finished.
Well, it is, in a way. I'm here on my own. I hope you don't mind.
Well?
We have the disappearance of Mr. Bedereau from the Boston boat. His suicide, if you wish. And then at the house, a body was identified as the butler's. Through the clothing. But I have a sixth sense about those things, and I became a little suspicious.
Aren't you rather overdoing it?
No, you see, in cases of extensive destruction, there's one identification that seldom fails. Teeth.
You found the butler's dentist?
No, I found Mr. Bedereau's dentist.
You know what you're doing. You're threatening the future of my child.
It was Bedereau who was killed in the explosion, wasn't it? Criminally insane?
And what will you do now that you've given it a name? You and your truth. No, I won't let you do it. I won't have my son live a life of terror like his father did. I'll fight you or anyone else.
Mrs. Bedereau, you won't have to fight me. I've got too much admiration for you. And you're right about the boy. I was guessing anyway. We could find nothing to ask a dentist about. It's all right, Mrs. Bedereau. You win. Goodbye.
Alida! Alida! Come out! It's a beautiful day.
Come out, Mother! Come out!
I'm coming. Wait for me!
Darling, did you ever see anything more beautiful than this field of daisies?
Never. Never.
I don't blame you. That was a cowardly trick, John, to kiss his wife right here. I don't blame you, G.I.s, at all. Thank you, Hedy Lamarr, John Loder, Fred Warlock, Theodore Von Else, and Joel Davis for your splendid portrayals in the adaptation of RKO's picture Experiment Perilous. And now there's nothing experimental or perilous in what Jimmy Wallington has to say. In fact, quite the reverse. Take it, James.
It may sound strange, but it's a fact. Philco Advanced Design Refrigerators are doing a vital war job in many homes by helping to lengthen the life of the family automobile. Yes, that's right. Homes that have a Philco refrigerator with a built-in freezer locker have found that one trip to market each week is enough. In one shopping trip, supplies can be bought for a week or more in advance. Frozen fruits, vegetables, and fish can be stored in the freezer locker where they will keep just as well as in the store. Fresh meat, too, can be frozen and kept until you are ready to serve it. Thousands of families who now own Philco Advanced Design refrigerators have been enjoying this service. They have been saving many a trip to the store, cutting down mileage on the family car, saving gasoline, sparing their tires. Of course, after victory, it may not be so important to save mileage on your car, but the freezer locker of the Philco refrigerator will be just as great a convenience, especially since housewives everywhere are recognizing the importance of frozen foods and frozen storage in modern food keeping. Yes, that Philco refrigerator of the future is worth waiting for. Your Radio Hall of Fame will continue after station identification. This is the Blue Network. This is Philco's Radio Hall of Fame, which, originating from the beautiful Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood, honors Hedy Lamarr, John Loder, Andy Russell, Eileen Barton, Marjorie Main, Beulah of the Fibber McGee and Molly program in the person of Marlon Hurt, Matty Malneck, Robert Maxwell, and your master of ceremonies, Al Pierce, who is all ready to master of ceremonies once more.
Your next nominee is a place in your Radio Hall of Fame is Andy Russell, a young fellow who a recent month has begun to cast quite a shadow in the pathway of Frank Sinatra. Well, he has one advantage over Sinatra. He can at least cast a shadow. Once a drummer in a band, in the past year, he started recording, and the sale of his record simply skyrocketed to the point where he is one of the most popular recording artists in the business, as well as having his own program on the Blue Network. Andy Russell gives you a sample of the kind of singing that brought him your invitation to the Radio Hall of Fame with Magic is the Moonlight. Andy Russell!
Magic is the moonlight on this lover's June night. I see the moonlight shining in your eyes. Can't resist their power in this moonlit hour. Love began to flower. Yes, this is paradise. Living in the splendor of your kiss so tender makes my heart surrender. We're love divine. Magic is the moonlight, much more than any June night. Magic is the moonlight. Muñequita linda, de cabellos de oro, de dientes de perlas y labios de rubí. Dime si me quieres como yo te adoro. De mí te acuerdas como yo de ti, que a veces escucho un eco divino y envuelto en la brisa para ser así. Yo te quiero mucho. Mucho, 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 tanto como entonces, siempre hasta morir. Yo te quiero mucho, 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 mucho.
I told you Andy Russell used to be a drummer in a band. Well, just listen to this solid beat man beat them their skins. Go to it, Andy. How you doing? Thank you. I'd like to see Sinatra try that. Or I'd like to see Whiteman try it. Oh, dear, would that be something? And now we are about to install in your Radio Hall of Fame an old friend of mine and a great screen favorite of yours, Margie Maine, whom you might call a commando-type Hedy Lamarr. In fact, she has everything that Hedy has. It's just distributed a little differently, that's all. Though not exactly the dainty type, she's a good egg in a hard-boiled sort of way. Seriously, that characteristic is greatly responsible for her being one of the leading character women in pictures because she's established a down-to-earth character moviegoers like. Miss Maine just won acclaim for her portrayal of the role of Cook in MGM's Meet Me in St. Louis. And that's why she's in your Hall of Fame. So let's bring her out. Here's that gorgeous, exotic bundle of love, Margie Maine.
Thanks, folks. As for you, Pierce, I may be a bundle, but it's certainly not love.
But, Miss Maine, I was just trying to...
And I haven't been exotic since the Chicago fire. I lost my sarong that never did get another one.
Oh, really, Miss Maine, I wasn't kidding. I think you're a real peacherino.
Well, if I'm a peacherino, what do you call Ann Sheridan, Betty Grable?
Well, they're nice girls, but they're not nearly as pretty as you are.
This guy's a mental case. If brains were soap, you wouldn't have enough to lather a mosquito.
Yeah, I'd sure like to give you malaria once. Miss Maine, ever since I saw you in Barnacle Bill years ago, I've been just plumb goofy about you.
Have you, Al?
Yeah, I thought you were the loveliest barnacle in the picture.
Pardon me, Al.
What is it, Mr. Whiteman? Paul?
I wonder whether you'd do one of your Elmer Blurt sketches tonight.
Well, I'd be glad to, but first let me introduce you to Margie Maine.
Margie Maine?
Mm-hmm.
My dream girl.
Yeah. Ah, what a night. What a night. First, Al Pierce falls for me. Now Paul Whiteman. This reminds me of a song. They're either too nuts or too fat.
I guess she doesn't believe us, Paul.
Well, I'm not used to being chased by men. Except for the club. It ain't natural.
Tell you what, Miss Maine, Al's going to do his Elmer act. How would you like to be the lady at the door?
Yeah, I need a romantic type for the part of the lady. Will you do it, Margie, please?
Romantic?
Yeah.
Okay, but watch out. When I get going, I'm a smudge pot with legs.
Well, on that, we'll just have to take a chance. Paul, will you set the scene, please?
Certainly. As Elmer is one jump ahead of all the other house-to-house salesmen, we now find him selling homemade valentines to the unsuspecting housewife.
Gosh, I sure like Valentine's Day. This is the time of year. This is the time of year when everybody's full of romance and love is in the air. I'll just try this door. I'll bet somebody here will be interested in Cupid. I hope.
Wow! A man! Hi, you can quit knocking now. You're inside. Well, I swept you off your feet, didn't I?
Yeah. Can I get back for my shoes now?
No. You stay right here. Sit down here on this love seat. Are you comfortable? Speak to me.
Well, first get your knee off of my chest, will you? You see, lady, all I'm doing is selling valentines.
Valentines? That sounds pretty romantic to me.
Yeah, has Cupid ever shot you in the heart with his little bow?
Nope. The only thing that ever hit me was a load of buckshot in a different place.
Well, that'll teach you not to tie your shoe during the hunting season. Now, which one of these valentines do you like best?
Let's see. This one with the funny face on it.
Yeah, that's me. Lady, I've been pounding the pavement all day, and honest to goodness, Willikers, my feet are sore, and they're killing me.
Well, sit down.
Yeah.
Here, put your feet in this bucket of water.
Oh, thanks, lady. My feet are burning up. I'll just stick them right in.
Oh, they sure was hot, wasn't it?
Yeah. My big toe ought to be well done by now.
Here, I'll just pour this sack full of stuff in the water, and that'll cool them off some more.
Yeah, but what is this stuff here?
Never mind. Just leave that to me.
Yeah.
There now. Just sit still, you sweet thing.
Yeah, but wait a minute. How about buying a valentine?
I don't trust you, salesman. I bought a vacuum cleaner last week, and a terrible thing happened to me.
What was it?
The cussed contraption picked my pipe off the floor and swallowed it.
Oh, golly. Did you get it back?
Nope. But it took all my breath out to draw that thing. I stopped once to get my wind back.
Yeah, then what?
Out went my team.
Well, my valentines are harmless. Won't you please take one, I hope?
Maybe. But first tell me, how would you like me to be your valentine?
No, thank you, lady. No.
Oh, why not? I'm just a girl at heart. People tell me I have a very individual appearance. Tell the truth. Have you ever seen a face like mine before?
Yeah, but he saw his shadow and went back in the hole.
I had my teeth in, I'd bite you.
Lady, whatever you put in this bucket sure made the water thick and muddy.
Oh, now, never mind. Just sit still. Let's get back to me. Isn't it thrilling, just you and me here alone? Look into my eyes. Don't they remind you of anything?
Yeah. Grandma told me to bring home some stuffed olives.
be serious a minute. What do you really think of me? Do you like my hair done in a bun?
I'd like it better if you took out the hamburger. Say, lady, that there stuff you put in the bucket sure makes my feet feel funny.
Quiet. See, do you know, I've been waiting for a man like you for so long.
Yeah, well, so long.
Oh, no. Don't go. I've saved up enough money for a torso.
You sure need one. Better get a new script there, too. I gotta be running along now. Gee, but my feet do feel funny.
Oh, you just sit still. You know something? I'm gonna buy every one of your valentines and give them to the man I love.
Oh, happy me, as Columbus said, a sail. Who is the lucky one?
You sweet man.
Oh, no, lady, I can't be your valentine, shucks. A valentine is somebody that you can depend on to always be by your side forever and forever.
That's you, brother. Just wait till you try to get your feet out of that cement.
Well, friends, looking at the clock, it's time to say goodbye. I'd like also to say goodbye for Hedy Lamarr, John Loder, Andy Russell, Eileen Barton, Marlon Beulah-Burt, and Margie Main, Maddie Malnick, Robert Maxwell, Paul Whiteman, and yours truly, Al Pierce. Now, next week, we'd like to say hello and welcome George Jessel, Kenny Baker, Ella Logan, Vera Vague, and Ethel Smith. and celebrates the birthday of Victor Herbert. And before I turn over the keys of your Radio Hall of Fame to Jimmy Wallington, may I say that Victor Herbert wrote beautiful music. But to me, the most beautiful music I ever heard is the symphony of Americans of all races and creeds working together in concerted effort with few discords toward one goal, victory. Thank you.
This is Jimmy Wallington signing off. And in behalf of Philco saying, be with us next Sunday when, broadcasting from the beautiful Earl Carroll Theater Restaurant in Hollywood, more stars made great by your recognition of their achievements will be admitted to your Radio Hall of Fame. Hedy Lamarr may soon be seen in Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer's Her Highness and the Bellboy. Al Pierce appeared by courtesy of his sponsor, Tums. This is the Blue Network.